Good morning. We're still in first place. This is the morning shift.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
That was awful.
I am him. He is I, Squidbilly. You heard the sultry tones of Tiffany jumping in on top of me. And the All-American from Alabama.
Mm.
Don't ask him what the P in Michael P. Johnson stands for.
Mm. Mikey P. Mikey P, that is. Yeah, man.
Yeah?
No, I was just thinking when you said the Alabama thing, I thought you were going to talk about our buddy at Dukes and Bell last night at Buffalo Wild Wings.
I was going to get there.
Yeah, I thought that's exactly where you're going off top. I was like, here we go.
Tiffany,
we ain't even 3 seconds into the show. Here he goes.
Tiffany, you got to hear this. So we go
to
the Dukes and Bell remote at the Buffalo Wild Wings at Perimeter, I think is the proper nomenclature.
Yeah, it's literally in the Perimeter Mall parking lot.
And it's probably the nicest Buffalo Wild Wings I've ever been to.
It's awesome. That place is sick.
They've got a whole rooftop. They got an upstairs bar, which goes into a rooftop outdoor seating. And so it's really cool. And walk in, and I think Dukes and Bell had just started. And I see Carl makes eye contact with me. And then he looks at this other dude and starts pointing. And then pointing towards us. And I'm just like, what have I walked into already? Has something happened 3 minutes into a remote that I have to put my management hat on for? No, not at all.
Probably not. Okay.
I sit down. Mike sits down. And here comes this gentleman with this huge frame.
Wish I could remember his name.
The frame was so wide that he was carrying it that he was about my height. And so I have the same issues that he does with arm length. I was afraid he couldn't carry it. That's how big the frame was. Extremely nice man, but Mike, you have to tell Tiff what was in there.
It was a newspaper clipping. It was a newspaper clipping of when I was at SEC Media Days leading in 2009 college football season, and also met him at SEC Media Days over in Hoover. And met him a time after that. He also had a picture of that too, but it was all matted and framed. The picture of him at SEC Media Days, and then obviously the article written with my face in the paper, and actually
it was quotes from you.
Yeah, it was quotes from me. But you know what's funny? The quotes were from Ian Rappaport because he was our Bama beat writer at that point. And I thought that's the funniest
hilarious.
Part to me.
Now
but
you
yeah,
should send that to him.
He was I tagged him a tweet that Bo put out there. It was funny. You can check that out on both of our Twitters if you want to. But man, I thought it was just a cool event. I appreciate that guy stopping by, man. It was cool to meet a bunch of people and see a bunch of people and get out amongst the folks. I got a chance to do that Saturday night at Dudley's as well, man. Just it's always a humbling experience when something like that happens. Cool stuff.
The picture that he had Mike sign, I guess, was from a concert or something. And I was like, is that like, were you like 14 in that picture? Because he looked young. I mean, you looked really young in that picture.
Well, I was. Well, that was probably 2011, so I wasn't that young. But Day-Day stopped by, brought the little one through, man. Good-looking kid, man. Good-looking kid, dap me up.
Thank you. Thank you,
man, good-looking.
Look, he gets it from me. That's right.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was funny, man, because I just straight bypassed Day-to-Day. He's like, what's up? I'm like, I'm talking to the kid, man. I usually speak kid language. You know what I mean? Let me get down there in this man's level. Let me get my dap. So that was awesome, man. And like you said, just a cool event to be amongst the folks, chopping it up. Carl and Mike always do a good job on those remote deals right there. But felt like a cool station event, man, to be a part of. So get out amongst the folks, have a few cold units.
I got home last night, sat on the couch, woke up, it was 9:30. I was like, uh-oh. And I could not go back to sleep. I ended up watching all of the second half of the Tampa Ravens game, which and we'll get to that in a minute because it wasn't much of a second half. But did you get anything last night?
The game. And then that was pretty much it. Got the bike, got the Peloton, got in. So I was excited to have that.
Oh, it finally arrived.
They arrive rather quickly how they distribute the Peloton
Prime.
Distribution system, I guess. That's how it works. So did my first ride. And then, yeah, called it a night.
Do we get to know who your instructor was?
I picked a Cody ride.
Cody.
He's hilarious.
Yeah, he chops it up. Yeah, he's
a
funny dude.
So it was a quick little thing, and then...
Do you know Cody, Day-Day? I don't know Cody.
Well, you should.
I don't have a Peloton.
Know Cody. He's good people.
I don't have a Peloton.
Yeah.
you would just see him like on probably the socials or something. But I don't
he's
know what you follow. So
people,
your
yeah.
wife, Amy, would definitely know.
She probably knows, yeah.
Know who that is.
Yes. Yeah, he's definitely one of the more famous instructors that Peloton has. He is definitely the funniest instructor that Peloton
by
has.
Far.
I've taken a couple of his rides, and he says stuff where I literally am like, can I pause this thing? Can I pause the workout? Like, cracks me up. But that's awesome, man. Glad you got to hop on that. I know that you've been wanting to get that in.
Yes, I have. Well, this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, so Monday Night Football, and the Buccaneers did not fare so well. I'm not just talking about the loss that they were handed by the Ravens, 41-31, but they lost a lot of key pieces on that offense, being Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, who was dealing with the hamstring injury. As for Godwin, it was some sort of ankle injury, and it did not look good. He was actually carted off. Baker Mayfield was showing his frustration while he was leaving the field, and it was pretty late in the game as well. So those are two big components that make that Bucs offense go that we don't know what their status will be.
Well, I can tell you Godwin's done.
I was trying to be optimistic until the official word came.
Yeah, he's done. He won't play. He won't play Sunday.
Let me say this. Let me just say this because I had this injury. All right, there's a number of different layers when you have a dislocated ankle like that. Mine was unfortunate because there was torn cartilage. Some people, like I think I want to say maybe Kenyon Drake, I know, had this injury. Maybe Dak Prescott as well, where there's not torn cartilage, and you bounce back a lot faster.
Yeah.
So that'll be something they have to look at. Also, you know, is the fibula intact and things like that. But definitely ugly. And, you know, you never want to see that happen, and you could see the reaction from the teammates for sure. But there's like – it's almost two different injuries when you talk about a dislocated ankle the way he had when you talk about, you know, the cartilage and what you have to do afterwards, microfracture surgery, all that kind of stuff to get back on the field.
Yeah, and I know Schefter tweeted that a dislocated ankle would end his season, and he is a free agent to be after this season, but I think Tampa will try to keep him. Now, I just don't think either guy is going to be – as bad as Evans' hamstring looked after that the attempted catch in the end zone where he went down, and you could tell it just the pain was so immense that basically everything else went to grab the hamstring. I don't see how either one of them play it. I would put them down to Trey Palmer, Sterling Shepard, and Jalen McMillan as their top three receivers, and Shepard would be a guy that's been on their practice squad, and I don't think he was up last night. He was up for our game because Jalen McMillan and Trey Palmer were both down when we played them a few weeks ago.
Not replace Mike Evans, and the fact that he was grabbing at the hamstring and trainers were trying to assist him at different points during the game while he was on the sideline, he was kind of waving them off like, no, I'm going to keep playing through this. And it's unfortunate because he's a key component to that offense.
Yeah, hamstrings are just one of those things you have to rest, right? And I don't think he practiced a couple of days last week and kind of building back from that, and it jumps up and bites him again. And don't forget, too, if you look at the Bucs injury report from Saturday, because they were, you know, 2 days out, the depth at wide receiver for them, they had a couple of wide receivers out of this game. I think the 5 and 6 guys, Rakeem Jarrett and Cameron Johnson, were both out of this game. So that depth becomes an issue for sure at the wide receiver spot. It's unfortunate, and you listen to all those guys talk about how Chris Godwin's such a good dude, deserved better than that, and you know, you hear Baker say that, and obviously a number of people throughout that team, you know, it sucks when you see a buddy like that get carted off. So I don't want to pass over it in terms of what the output is, but leadership-wise for that team, I mean, those two guys are kind of the heart and soul of that unit, so that's it's tough to see.
And it goes without saying what Mike Evans means to them. But I remember when Chris Godwin was just getting to the Bucs and just coming on. He wasn't even actually involved in a role in the offense yet. And I was already getting notes on him of, hey, during training camp, we think this guy is like going to be it. We think really highly of this guy. Good things were going to come for him. And that ended up being what's happening. So I do think what you were saying, Bo, with the contract and all that kind of stuff, free agency, I do believe they'll do right by him because the Bucs have shown to do that in the past, at least get a deal done with Evans back then, if you remember that, when all that was coming up. So we'll have to see what happens. But certainly, when did the Falcons get them again?
Sunday,
right? So,
it's going to be two. Honestly, I know that you just say Mike Evans and you say Chris Godwin, you can go, those are, there's nothing the Falcons could have injury-wise that's bigger than that. But we were talking about in the office before. I think if Matthew Bergeron can't go and you still have Ryan Neuzel, I think that's a huge deal for the Falcons too now, because you've got one of the better defensive fronts that they, I mean, Vita Vea is, on to me, on Ryan Neuzel, is not a matchup that's good for us. I didn't think it was great.
Vita Vea against anybody is not a matchup that's good.
It's very true. But they also got Kalijah Kansi back, and that guy's a pretty good player as well. I just think that losing two-thirds of your interior offensive line, if that's the case, we don't know what the situation is with Matthew Bergeron and if he'll play or not, because he could be in there. Yeah. But losing if Bergeron and Neuzel, and Dahlman's not back, and it's Neuzel, that's tough. And remember, Neuzel got banged up in the game Sunday too, so you don't know where he'll be. I think it was just kind of got rolled up on the way he was in a pile, but you never know how that's going to feel for him.
No, I completely agree. And not only that, I was already looking at this game, and I want to say, I of course, you guys know I'm an offensive lineman, so I'm looking at it going, okay, Ryan Neuzel struggled against Vita Vea last time. I want to see what changes they make, because we've talked about it. Our run game is so – it's not – vanilla is not the word, but there's not a lot to it. Like, there's only a few layers, right? And so I want to see what Dwayne Ledford and Zach Robinson have kind of planned for this matchup with Ryan Neuzel and Vita Vea, if to your point that Ryan Neuzel is allowed to go, right, health-wise. So – there's a number of different things you can do. You can change some of the blocking schemes and do some different things, but that's going to be one to keep an eye on, I think, for me on Sunday for sure.
More Falcons on the way when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back here on the Morning Shift, 2 days post a rough loss for the Falcons against the Seahawks. And in that game, we heard Coach Raheem Morris during halftime and even after the game talking about how he felt like the team just felt kind of flat and that things weren't necessarily clicking on offense or on defense. So let's focus specifically on defense. So he did get to speak with Dave Archer on the Raheem Morris coaching show. We know the pass rush has been an issue, but he is starting to see some positives.
It's both.
Yeah.
You know, you wanted to get him on the ground, but it is definitely positive improvement by those guys. I believe yesterday we had the one sack by JSW. Mm-hmm. He made a great move and great power rush. We had another, which you thought it was a sack at the time, when you get the fumble snap, muff snap out the backfield, and Rook made a really good rush and got around there and got a chance to touch him down. And then we had the intentional grounding with Damone getting elevated yesterday, making a play for us on that edge, being able to cause some stuff like nature. And then the hurries and all the stuff that was happening with Grady and some of the interior guys was really positive. It was really trending in a positive direction. And we just got to improve on that performance and get it better every single week.
So right now, the Falcons have a league worst 6 sacks, and their pass rush win weight rate. I knew I was going to.
Win weight.
Win weight. Can't do it. I have a trouble with the R's, like wrestle and W's. But anyway, that's another story. So 34.4%. So that's also 6 worst in the NFL.
Well, this was their best game as far as pressures go. I mean, I think they pressured on 50% of the times they came of his dropbacks, which is good, except for the fact that I think he was like 6 of 6 for 92 yards in some of those. So it was that was not when they blitz, I should say. So getting home is the problem for me. I've heard people talk about being aggressive. I think they've been very aggressive at times in how they've came after the quarterback. The problem is they haven't won enough, and I mean win by getting the quarterback on the ground. So many times guys get flushed. Also, correct me if you think I'm wrong, Mike, but I feel like the coverage we play in the secondary is a detriment to the pass rush. When you play off, and a veteran, we've played a lot of veteran quarterbacks. When they see that you're coming, and you're playing 7 to 8 yards off of a receiver, they're going to get the ball out quick.
Yeah, but I think it goes hand in hand, right? I think when you play that kind of coverage, a lot of times you play it because you're not sure if you're going to get home. Right. I mean, that's kind of, I think it kind of goes back and forth, right? I mean, when you walk up and you're impressed, it's like, dude, I'd love to press a guy you know, and I know we can cover them for a little bit downfield, but if I thought we could get home up front, we'd walk up and press them right now, you know, and try to get home with just our four-man rush or maybe adding a fifth guy in there, but I just don't think that's what they see right now. And I think Jimmy Lake is trying to do anything and everything he can to make sure to kind of keep, you know, to tread water just a little bit. So I don't know. I think it's a back and forth listening to Reem's comments right there. It just, I love the fact that he's trying to be positive about it. It just thinks that we can kind of off the top of our head pick out like the four plays. You know what I mean? Like I'm okay, just like, well, dude. I'm with you. But I did see some good things. I don't want to take away from any of that, but nonetheless, I hope it starts to ramp up.
Well, not to go down a different path, but I don't see Mike Evans and Chris Godwin next week line up. I might be more open, and maybe they will be more open to coming up and pressing unproven receivers or guys who haven't produced to that extent in the league because maybe I can get to Baker.
Yeah. Well, and here's what I'll say. Baker is agile. Mobile, I guess, is the word, but I'm going to call him more agile. He moves around in the pocket well, still looking to throw downfield. And that's something we talked about through the first 3 or 4 weeks. When you looked at the matchups you had, it was like, you know, these are not easy guys to rush. Last week really did line up in terms of what Geno Smith is, what that offensive line is. And so I think when you look at it from that angle, hopefully that thing can kind of correct itself a little bit. You try to get home on Baker.
Well, there's decisions that are involved in deciding on when you want to try to rush the quarterback. That did sound repetitive, but Coach Raheem Morris, he made more sense when he talked with Dave Archer on the coach's show.
You know, the hardest times when you get down to those seconds at the end of halves, you know, it's like a Hail Mary situation. How many are you going to rush? You know, some people rush an overload. Some people rush three. Some people rush none, you know, depending on what the situation is when you're talking about the Hail Mary situation. This wasn't quite the Hail Mary. This was kind of the must out of bounds or the ozone type plays that you hear about a little bit on television where it must be out of bounds or in the end zone. So when you're protecting the out of bounds because you throw it in front and we get a tackle, the half's over, that could be disastrous for them. We're talking about those guys like we did a couple years ago when they couldn't finish that thing in the playoffs. A couple years ago. But what you want to get done for us, man, is get this guy to throw the ball in bounds or then throw it out of bounds, settle over his head. They kick it a long field goal. They either make it or miss it at that point. And at this point against us, people have been nailing those things. But, you know, you can't let that guy across your face to be able to go do those things. There's a lot of thought process going in that. And we went with the outside two-man version of what we wanted to do. And we can't let that guy get across our face from a safety standpoint. And we got to make those plays.
And he's talking about that touchdown to Metcalf in the first half where I think they only sent three guys. And there was no pressure at all on Geno. He stood back there, and again, we talked about it yesterday. AJ played outside, so he's funneling that receiver inside because he's got safety help. And Raheem just told you the safety never crossed the face of the receiver, and so DK Metcalf gets a touchdown in the end zone, and you think, oh, well, AJ Terrell got burned again. Wasn't on AJ Terrell.
Yeah. Well, not only that. There's a point in time, like 30 seconds or a minute before that, where you think our offense is going to march down the field, mm-hmm. and they're not able to get it done. And so you hate that you even put your defense in that situation. But, I mean, look, I just keep coming back and kind of replaying plays in my head. There was a number of times you walk up and you kind of bluff with a six-man front, and you walk Nate and Caden up, you know, in some of the A gaps or B gaps, and you kind of give that look, and then you bail. And you hope in those instances you run the twist games with Matthew Judon. Matthew Judon has not been good on twist games. I mean, like, it's unbelievable to watch him. He's a good edge rusher. He got stonewalled a number of times in this game, but then they was like, oh, let's run a twist game. Let's run a TE, see if we can get Judon on the inside to pressure. It ain't working either, man. So I will be curious, to your point, how they play the receivers this coming Sunday, because I think you have to mix up coverages. Obviously, you're a heavy cover three team, but you don't even run it half the time that you're on the field. That's your kind of your base. I'd be curious to see how physical they do want to get, though, with some of these younger guys that they'll be playing next weekend.
Well, and I do think, did I dream that Troy Anderson might practice this week? I thought I saw that reported, and I need to double check because I took a long nap last night. All I remember is waking up and watching the Tampa Bay game.
Buffalo Wild Wings, a little too much for you.
Well, it was just a long day. But I swear I saw that Troy Anderson was going to practice, and I think that could be huge in the run game. Nate Lehman back. Because
You are correct.
I'm correct?
So, set to return on Wednesday.
See, that's huge because I think then you could have instances where you have all three linebackers on the field at once, and I mean inside linebackers with Caden Ellis, Troy Anderson and Nate Lambin, because I think this team, they've kind of developed a three-headed monster at running back. quietly, Tampa Bay has one of the deepest running back rooms in the league with Sean Tucker, Rashad White, and Bucky Irvin. And Irvin's their home run guy. And I think you have three guys now. They might want to run the ball, but you could also use Caden Ellis in situations where he's coming off the edge, or maybe he's used in some kind of twist, stunt, blitz, whatever you want to, you know, whatever you want to dial up, and he could be an extra pass rusher. Because one thing Caden Ellis does a really good job of is discipline in the pass rush game.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Not with that, but you think about the possibilities, and I don't know what Jimmy Lake's got in his back pocket. I don't know what these guys have cooking up. I know that you've seen some odd front this year. I think that Caden Ellis could be a part of that. Obviously, if you can move Troy Anderson in there, it kind of adds that speed onto the field in some of those situations where maybe you take out a D lineman and you're able to put those three guys on the field. And like I said, you feel good about the speed for that. I will ask you this, too. Have you noticed that we really have not seen much of Zach Harrison this year, and his snap count seems to be down? And it seems like when he's on the field, I notice him because it seems like he's wreaking havoc, but we haven't seen much of him. And I'm just curious how that he kind of fits in this puzzle, and wonder if you'll see more reps out of him eventually in the pass rush game, because he seems to be decently disruptive, especially when he's in a four-man front and he's over one of those guards to be able to do some things. So I'd be curious to see how that all pans out, but you got to find something. I guess my overall kind of theme as we talk about it here is we keep throwing stuff at the wall and wondering what if. And Raheem's like, you know, we're getting better. It's got to all come together at some point, man. You have to have one of these games where you can actually affect the passer and not have to, you know, kind of keep your finger in the dam on the back end.
And Harrison only played 11 snaps on Sunday. But you know who did get a lot of snaps Sunday and who I thought had his best game of the season? I know he didn't get home, but I thought Arnold Ebikadi played his best game of the season.
I thought you were going to say Damon Harrison. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's his only game of the season.
No. Ebikadi played 50% of the snaps on defense. He got two less snaps than Matthew Judon. And basically, it was Judon, Smith-Williams, and Ebikadi, the three guys that were consistently on the edge coming after Geno. And obviously, Damon Harris had a couple plays in there as well. He got Damon Harris played a lot of snaps.
He had to. Both of them had to, honestly.
He took Zoe's snaps, but I know with Zoe out, Ebikadi got more. I thought Ebikadi played pretty well. I know he didn't get home, but I thought he made some plays in the run game and was right there. He actually overran the touchdown that Kenneth Walker caught.
I can't remember when James Smith-Williams went out. Refresh my memory. I can't remember what point of the game that was.
I think it was in the second or third quarter.
And you got him and Zoe out. You got to kind of plug that up with a bunch of those guys.
But he came back in.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I know he did, but I'm just saying that that's going to be added snaps too.
The NBA season starts tonight, but the Hawks in action tomorrow will set the table on the other side. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This music makes me feel like basketball. I feel like it's something you'd hear before, I don't know, maybe a basketball show, maybe ahead of a game before a
basketball, but like the movie Semi-Pro. Like that's,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I could see that, too. Well, the pros will be in action. The NBA season tips off tonight. Your Atlanta Hawks are in action tomorrow against Brooklyn. Of course, you can hear that right here on 92.9 The Game with your pregame at 7 o'clock, and tip, of course, at 7:30. Big news, though, for the team. They reached a contract extension with Jalen Johnson, so that is significant. The team announced that Monday night. Of course, they had until 6 p.m. on Monday to try to reach terms with him before it spilled over into free agency. So luckily, they were able to get a deal done, and according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution sources, the deal is worth $150 million over the next 5 years with no options.
That'll work, right? That'll work.
I'll take that.
Give that man his zeros. I like it. Obviously, when we had Quinn on last season, that was kind of during the Jalen Johnson injury, and we talked to him just about how much Jalen meant to this team and what Quinn was trying to get accomplished. He basically said, look, man, he's the straw that serves the drink, right? He's the guy that kind of does it, can push the ball up the floor. He's got length defensively. And I think just overall, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong, he's a guy that kind of outlines the blueprint for the Atlanta Hawks in terms of player development, right? Spent a number of seasons being developed. Obviously, all season highs last year, and you didn't know what to expect from him going into last season when you get rid of John Collins. But rises to the occasion, man. And when you look at what the future is, a big part of this organization is Jalen Johnson. To me, he's the most untouchable player on the roster, and that includes Trey. So I think the money's well-deserved. He does a lot of good things. And like I said last week, man, I'm ready to be heard again by this Atlanta Hawks team. I'm ready to be heard again. If that's what's in the card, so be it. But I'm ready to get this thing tipped off, see what we got.
Well, you're all in with these three. You're going to battle with these. These are your three, your main three guys, Trey, Jalen, and Risha Shea. And I think it's important to say that and to know that's where you're going and give those guys – now that everybody can kind of rest, especially Jalen can rest easy. He's not thinking about a contract all year. He had his breakout year last year in, I think, 56 games where he averaged 16 points, which was 11 over his career average before that. So, look, go get the job done now. Go get us in the playoffs. Let's not be in the playoff, the play-in round this year. Let's go get into the season and try to make a run at least at the worst, an Eastern Conference Finals.
Let's do this thing.
And you guys pretty much echoing what Hawks general manager Landry Fields said, talking about Jalen Johnson, talked about his continuous growth and improvement year to year that he has developed into a significant part of our team, and we're thrilled to continue his development in Atlanta. Let's get a check on some college football. So there has been some shifting in the AP poll, and we did not get to dive into that a lot. So let's look at the rankings. One is Oregon, perfect on the season at 7-0. Two, Ohio State, 5-1. Three, Penn State, 6-0. Georgia is now 4, so they did move up a spot. They are 6-1, and Miami is 7-0 at 5. As for Texas, after that loss to the Dogs, they fell to 6 at 6-1 now on the season.
Yeah, it's weird. I kind of actually enjoy the fact and like the fact that the voters have put Miami down where they have, because they've struggled so mightily at times this year. I'm not sure who Miami is. And Penn State hasn't really gotten, I don't know. Penn State's played very well, and they've beat everybody in front of them, but to that point, who have they beat?
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny about it, too, and kind of looking at this poll and kind of mulling it over, it just feels like, and obviously Oregon at one, deservedly so at one, but when you look at Georgia, too, you're like, man, that just seems like a runaway train right now, right? It just seems like the way they played last week, you're like, who's going to step in front of that one and be able to stop that? Seems like they're playing extremely well right now. But you look at it, it's a Big Ten heavy right there in the top five. It feels like Texas slides back, like Tiff said. I don't know, man. Like, I still look at all these teams in the top ten and wonder myself who's good. I think Georgia's definitely, in my opinion, the best one-loss team. Ohio State could be there, but there's just a number of teams because of how big these conferences are that won't play the opponents that you're used to seeing them play. And so you don't have the hiccups that you would have normally seen for teams like Penn State and some of the other squads that are up there in the top 10.
Is it weird to you that LSU is the quietest number 8, 6-1 that LSU's ever been 6-1? It just feels,
because not everyone's taught. I mean, you had Tennessee on the up and up this year, and LSU again was talked about going into the season, but then they lost to
USC.
So,
it is weird,
but they beat Ole Miss.
But they beat Ole Miss,
and no one talked about it because it was the same night Oregon.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
it's, Ole Miss had a stinker out there as well, where they lose to Kentucky. So that's one of the things that you look at and you go, both of those teams though, and they'll face off. Both those teams, LSU and Texas A&M, who will face off this weekend. Very, very quiet. A&M had the loss to Notre Dame, and it's just like nobody's really paid attention. Yeah. And now all of a sudden they're like leading the SEC. That's a matchup of two teams that are unbeaten in the SEC this year that you'll see this weekend.
I should tell you guys, so I get a big matchup on Friday night this week in Vegas, and that is Boise State, because you have to say Boise. People don't like it when you say Boise.
That's the dirt cutter thing.
So I'm just going to say Broncos to steer clear in the broadcast.
Is it Boise or Boise?
Boise.
Boise. Yeah,
that was a
dirt
cutter
thing. But they get very, just like out there, Nevada is Nevada.
It's not Nevada. It's Nevada.
So, of course, I have UNLV. So, it's Boise. We'll just say UNLV.
Man, they're difficult out there.
You know? But I do get to see, I know Mike, outside of yesterday, after the show, you'd asked me about Haj Malik Williams, so we got to talk to him. That's what I was also doing yesterday. I blanked out when you asked me this morning. We had production calls a Monday, which is very unusual.
Yeah.
But the game is on Friday this week. So we did get to talk to him. Excellent kid, great story, transferring in from Campbell and then making a huge impact with the UNLV program. And then, of course, we're going to get to see Ashton Jeanty, who is in the Heisman Trophy conversation, and we will talk to them, I think that's Thursday or something this week. So, but anyway, that's going to be fun to watch. He is close to college football's single season rushing record held by Barry Sanders. He's close to breaking it. So we'll see if that ends up happening.
I'll be rooting for him for the Heisman. I'm hoping he's able to do it because here's the thing. Boise State aside, whatever the record is aside, I am a fan of when guys are able to do it from a place like Boise State. I miss the days when you'd get the Randy Mosses of the world and the Steve McNairs and whoever else it was. It's turned into kind of a who's the best player on the best team kind of award, it seems like, the last 10, 12, 15 years. I'll be rooting for a guy like that, and I can't wait to see him perform on Friday night because I think that's a fun matchup.
It is. And then, you, of course, Boise is 18th ranked in the AP poll, and UNLV is the 25th ranked team.
Good for
in
them.
The AP poll.
Good. So. Their quarterback leaves.
Matchup.
Their quarterback leaves. The other guy gets plugged back in. I think we talked about that line that week. They were still favored by like 6 or something, and I was like, man, that doesn't make any sense. That's a Vegas knows that they're going to be good. They've played well, and so they've kind of fought their way in. Shout out to Barry Odom out there for the job he's done with that program that has always been fledgling, and yet here they are rising to the occasion, even missing their quarterback. So
yes, they have, and this should be a fun one to see on Friday night. When we come back, guys, we'll look ahead to Sunday because the Falcons are taking on the Bucs. Lots of injury news ahead of this one, including two key stars for Tampa Bay that might be missing in action for this one. So stay with us. We'll be back at the top of the hour on the morning shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game.